Next up, our Sandy coverage continues with the video pick of the week. Hi, Flora. Flora Lichtman's here.
Hi, Ira. Of course, how could we resist?
And how can we add something no one has ever seen?
I think we might be able to this week.
Yeah.
I mean, NASA and NOAA are producing tons of neat visualizations of Sandy. And I think a lot of people are familiar with the blue marble ones,
sure,
where you see the Earth in the background and you see this enormous, I mean, really enormous puff of clouds traveling up the coast. But that's not the only thing that satellites are looking at. They're not just looking at Sandy. They're looking in Sandy. And I think that actually that some of the images that these satellites are producing, this imagery is producing, have escaped the media this week.
Yeah. Let's see if we can get a quote.
The TRIM satellite is one of the best kept secrets of NASA.
The TRIM?
The TRIM satellite and the secret's out. that was Dr. Owen Kelly at NASA Goddard. And basically what the satellite does is it takes radar data and images the insides of storms.
It's like a CAT scan of a, like you get your body CAT scan. He's got the CAT scan of the inside.
Right, exactly. Except not X-ray, but radar.
Right.
And we have an expert actually on the line, a special guest for Pick of the Week to tell us more about it. J. Marshall Shepard is the president-elect of the American Meteorological Society and the director of the Atmospheric Sciences Program at the University of Georgia. Welcome to the show.
It's great to be here.
So what can we learn about hurricanes by looking inside of them?
Yeah, well, hurricanes are basically like big heat engines. And over the years, we've gained a great deal of knowledge in telling the public where hurricanes are going. In other words, our hurricane track forecasts are quite good. Where we suffer some is the intensity forecast. We still have a bit limited knowledge in that regard. By looking inside these storms, essentially popping the hood, if you will, we can actually see the engine. Now, we can't see the engine directly, but we can see the rainstorms. And the rainstorms are basically signatures of energy being released in the hurricane. And so by being able to identify these big pistons, if you will, in the engine, we can say something about intensity processes, the rain potential of the storm. And ultimately, some of this data may find its way in the future into our computer models, which hopefully would improve intensity forecasting.
Did popping the hood of Sandy reveal anything interesting?
Yeah, we could see as Sandy was moving up towards the north, taking these CAT scans and looking at these rainstorms, we could clearly see that there was a very well-defined system, tropical system, with an eye and a well-defined eye wall. The eye wall is the region of thunderstorms surrounding the eye. That was telling us quite a bit. The storm was still fairly organized, and even as Sandy moved further north and got over the warm Gulf Stream waters, we saw intensification just prior in the hours prior to landfall, because it was really tapping into the fuel supply for hurricanes is warm water, and the warmer the water, the higher the octane for that engine, if you will. So it's really a very different view of storms, and one that NASA has pioneered. I worked for 12 years at NASA at Goddard Space Flight Center, working on the TRIM mission and also as the deputy project scientist on the mission that would follow TRIM, the Global Precipitation Measurement Mission, or GPM.
Now, I heard that the GOES satellite was down a few weeks before Sandy, and we had to rely on a backup satellite. Do you think that our satellite coverage is sufficient to monitor storms like this going forward? I mean, are they being replaced as they age?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I always tell people satellites are not like light bulbs. Once one goes out, you can't run down to Home Depot and replace it with another. You have to have a few years to plan. GOES 13 did go out several weeks ago. Luckily, we had a spare GOES 14 that we could put in place, and that really helped to prevent any lapses in coverage or any danger. But what if we didn't? I think that's a reasonable question to have. What if we did not have GOES 14 or GOES 13 there? Those are geosynchronous satellites that are really the eye in the sky for much of the eastern United States and the hurricane basin of Gulf of Mexico and the Atlantic. There has been some discussion. There was a recent National Research Council report out, and there are other discussions about whether we would see a potential gap in some of our polar satellite coverage here in the United States out and around the 2017 timeframe. Our satellites are aging. NOAA does have a plan in place. We have the JPSS and the GOES-R satellite programs that are forthcoming. But due to budget pressures and other things that have been going on here in the environment in the last 2 years or so, there's a real concern of whether we would see a gap.
Let me see if I can tunnel through that Washington speak that you just said, spoke for a minute, and see if I can put it in simpler language. And tell me if I'm wrong. There, we may lose a satellite because the Congress is not going to appropriate the money for it.
Well, that's a good way to put it. We, as I mentioned, we can't just pop the satellite up there. It takes many years of engineering, testing, and then launch. And so we have a plan in place. There is a program in place, but you have to have the money. We can't essentially put these satellites on layaway, if you will. So we really need to have the budget in place and the commitment. And I think that NOAA and our colleagues there are committed. I think that there is a desire because we, and even more so with things like Sandy, we realize the value of these satellites, not just for monitoring the storm, but 85 to 95% of the data from these satellites go into our forecast models. And it shouldn't be missed that Sandy was picked up by some of our best forecast models in the European models 8-9 days out. That's unprecedented or unheard of even 10 years ago.
This is Science Writer from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow with Flora Lichtman, talking with J. Marshall Shepard, President-elect of the American Meteorological Society.
Is there a satellite technology that, you know, you wish you had? Some kind of next-generation super satellite?
What if we gave you a blank check? Forget well, Congress. We give you a blank. We maybe call Donald Trump up and ask him to give you a blank check and give you the money for the satellite that you would like.
I have my birth certificate and my passport, so I think I'm safe. But, you know, one of the things, and I may be a bit biased, but some of the technology that, for example, flies on some of the low Earth orbiting satellites, like the radars that TRIM flies and that GPM will fly, and even some of the laser technologies that we now have for things like monitoring surface height of the ocean. These can only fly on low Earth orbiting satellites, but boy, it would really be great to have a precipitation radar or that type of capability on some of our geosynchronous satellites, which basically stay parked and monitor the same location over the Earth. Now, those geosynchronous satellites are at about 35,000 kilometers or roughly 23,000, 24,000 miles up. So technologically, it's a bit challenging now to put a radar on a geosynchronous satellite, but it would be really groundbreaking and an advance if we could.
You know, we talked for the last part of this hour about climate change and infrastructure and how to prepare for storms like this, and you have had a really instructive analogy for how to link this storm with climate change. Will you walk us through it?
Yeah, well, I think that the previous segment talked about that the DNA of climate change is apparent in Sandy through the sea level rise. I really like that analogy about lifting a basketball court a foot or two, which means you'll get more slam dunks. The analogy I use is also a sports analogy. During Major League Baseball, during the steroid era, we know that there were more home runs and longer home runs being hit, likely due to steroids, although any individual home run during the season I couldn't conclusively link to steroids. We know that there was an era of longer home runs and more home runs. And I think that's kind of how we are looking at, and from my perspective at least, Sandy. I think we have primed the system for more intense storms going forward, although every single storm might not be a Sandy. With warmer sea surface temperatures and an atmosphere that can hold more water vapor because it's warmer, we've essentially primed the pump for more storms. So I think climate change, is the steroid on storms of the future. We can't link any individual storm, but I think we can show that there is a footprint on the overall intensity increases. We can't say much, I would argue, about how more frequent these types of storms will be. I don't think our science and the literature is there, but there is some informative literature by colleagues at NOAA like Tom Knutson and Bender, which suggests that we would see more intense storms.
Yeah, because the heat on the sea surface is that fuel, right, for those? Yeah.
Absolutely. I one of the interesting things about Sandy is it was a hybrid system in more than one way. It was a hybrid system in that it was a hurricane and then became an extratropical storm. But if you think about hybrid cars, it was getting its fuel from the ocean for the first half of its life cycle, but then it transitioned to a mid-latitude cyclone, and it's getting its fuel from the atmosphere. And that's the difference in these types of storms.
Thank you, Dr. Shepard, for joining us today.
Oh, I was happy to be here.
Marshall Shepard is the president-elect of the American Meteorological Society and the director of Atmospheric Sciences Program at the University of Georgia.
And this great video up there, up on our website, it's our video pick of the week that shows the, what we're calling the CAT scan of Sandy.
Of Sandy. Some of the images I think most people haven't seen, and also even the ones you have seen, I don't know if you've seen the full video of it rolling up the globe. It really puts Sandy in context.
And also part of the video that we didn't get into, we didn't hear from anybody else, is that high pressure front that bumped Sandy westward, made it take a left hook, was sitting over Greenland. Right?
Yes, Dr. Shepard told us this in the video, that they seem to be linked, that warming above Greenland over the summer that caused all that melting may be linked to actually what caused Sandy to turn left.
And you can see that, you actually see the video, the images of Greenland melting also in our video. It's quite dramatic.
Yeah.
Thank you, Flora.
Thank you.
That's about all the time we have for today. We've run out of time on Science Friday for this hour. Our program's senior producer is Ed Heiss. Charles Berquist is our director. Flora Lichtman is our multimedia editor. Our associate senior producer, Christopher Intagliata. Luis Quevedo, our Spanish language producer. Denise Chow, our associate producer. Sam Plato, our production assistant. John Chang is our intern. Neil Rauch, our technical director, spinning the dials here in New York. If you missed any part of the program, go to iTunes or you can go to Android and subscribe to our podcast. Audio and the video pick of the week are on our podcast. If you get the apps, you can watch them and listen to them anytime you'd like. Go to our website at Science Friday, and also where we tweet all week at SciFry, and also at our website at sciencefriday.com. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.